It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Sanchez to Jones. Swing and a miss. He struck him out on a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. Martin the target. Here's a 2-2 pitch. Strike three called. Outside corner. Two down. Here's a 3-2 pitch. Half swing. Did he go? Yes, says the plate umpire. Will Little. He struck him out. And Aaron Sanchez just struck out the side.
I think today I threw a lot more four seams. But it just, I face these guys so much. You know, you kind of got an idea of what they're doing. You just never know how they're going to come out. Sometimes they come out super aggressive. Sometimes, you know, they come out and they wait around. Tonight they were super aggressive. I was able to locate my heater when I needed to.
It's At the Letters for Wednesday, September 28th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what is going on?
Not a whole lot. How's it going with you?
It's going okay. We are here in the last week of the season. Do you feel good, personally, do you feel good about that? Or, like, do you feel like, oh, no, like, life might not have purpose in a couple weeks? Or do you feel like it's been long enough? It's time for a break.
Sometimes I'd say, like, about once a month in the course of the season, I think they play so much baseball. play so much baseball. And so I had that thought this week. And yeah, I love baseball. Baseball's great. I'm also looking forward to the playoffs, especially the early part of the playoffs, because for me, the wild card games, the possibility of play-in games, and the division series, that's right. The best time of the playoffs. The World Series, it's hit and miss. Sometimes the World Series, great.
A little boring sometimes.
Yeah. Other times, you know, you get a sweep and there's just not that much tension. So for me, the next 2 weeks are probably the most entertaining 2 weeks that we see in the course of a baseball season.
That's fair. That's fair. It's hard to believe that. And I think just as you get older in life, like, time just goes faster. Like, it's hard to believe, like, spring training, February. Like, that's what we're talking now, like, 8 months ago. Is that right? Like, geez.
It's been a while. Yeah.
It's 8 months ago.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Like, we were different people then. We were completely different human beings.
I don't know. I feel mostly the same.
I feel like I've grown over the course of this season and evolved and developed. The Blue Jays have grown and evolved and developed, you know, for the good and for the bad. They seem to have come out of that little skid that they were in earlier this month. They're playing more like the team that we saw for the vast majority of the season. They're in a spot right now where, as we record this, they're in the first wild card spot, 2 games up on Baltimore, 3 games up on Detroit. They're in the driver's seat for the postseason for the first wild card spot. I do believe that if they sweep the Orioles, they clinch that number one spot.
Yep.
So here's a question for you. If they sweep the Orioles, do you think we're seeing champagne on Thursday?
I think 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that if the champagne is not in Rogers Center right now, then it will be, you know, I'm sure that there's some stadium operations person whose job it is to make sure there's champagne. Because, yeah, if you clinch top wildcard spot tomorrow, absolutely you would celebrate.
Do you champagne celebrate just clinching a postseason berth as they did last year?
Yeah, I think they would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the moment that the Blue Jays are officially in the postseason, should that happen, they're celebrating.
And that can sometimes be a hard thing to gauge. Sometimes that depends on, you know, Detroit losing or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you could clinch a postseason by somebody else losing a game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could go into a game knowing you'd already clinched, technically.
Right. Yeah. Right? And that's where the timing can get super weird.
Yeah. It does get super weird this time of year. The Blue Jays playing better, man. Like, they're looking better. They're hitting better. The pitching is on. The starters are on just a run right now that is remarkable and unbelievable, the way that the starting pitching. And, you know, the Blue Jays have had the best starting staff ERA throughout the course of the season. I think they've been even better over these last 10 or so games.
Yeah, they've been great. If you look at the numbers, that's definitely been the case. If you just look at the consistency that they've gotten from their starters, and it's a group now including Francisco Liriano, Aaron Sanchez. I mean, for him to have the best ERA in the American League after 185 innings is pretty crazy. And it's not what anyone could have expected in spring training when he was battling with Gavin Floyd for that final rotation spot.
Yes, I think Aaron Sanchez is fresh in everyone's mind because last night, we're recording this on Wednesday, last night on Tuesday, he went out and just shoved against the Baltimore Orioles. 10 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes, both season highs. He had it working. And the interesting thing to me about that Aaron Sanchez outing So he was saying after the game, you know, I kind of like I asked him because I just saw a lot of heaters. Like I saw him just leaning on a fastball like all night long. And, you know, from our vantage point in the press box, sometimes it can be hard to get a gauge on movement and sync and stuff. So I kind of asked him, I was like, it looked like you threw a lot of two seamers because I just assumed if Aaron Sanchez is relying on a heater, it's generally his two seamer because that's what he's used throughout really his career, but especially this season to be successful. And he was like, nah, man, actually I used my four seamer a lot today. And I was kind of like, huh, that's interesting. So the fifth time that you're facing the Baltimore Orioles this season, all of a sudden you bring out this four seamer, all of a sudden you're elevating with it, using it up in the zone, getting Adam Jones to chase up, getting a lot of guys to chase up in the zone. That was a really important pitch for him. And that was a really key adjustment that he made against a lineup that's seen him a lot. He said, you know what? They're probably expecting me to come out and let my two seamer eat. Let my two seamer eat down in the zone. Here's a bunch of four seamers up. Deal with it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because a lot of pitchers might have the thought to, okay, I'm going to do something different this time. Not a lot of pitchers have two separate versions of their fastball that can be that effective.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of guys might say, yeah, I'll try my four seamer. And then they end up, especially against a home run hitting team like the Orioles, they'd end up allowing a few bombs. And that just didn't happen because Sanchez has such good stuff. And, you know, in particular, against this Orioles lineup, a lineup that he could face in the wild card game next week, he's been very successful.
I misspoke earlier. The 10 strikeouts were not a season high. He struck out 12 against Detroit earlier this year, but the 10 were a number two on the season. The swinging strikes were a season high, which is which indicates just how good his stuff was and how ill prepared the Orioles were for it and for the plan that he had against them. And, you know, I think the Orioles were really aggressive last night, and Aaron Sanchez kind of mentioned that as well after the game, that like they came out really aggressive. So it kind of played perfectly into his game plan. But, you know, when you think about, you know, before last night's start, I think you might have said, you know, well, if you face the Orioles in the wildcard game, maybe you want J-Hap. Maybe that's a guy for that spot. Now, with what Aaron Sanchez did last night, does that change things a little bit? Does that recalibrate a little bit?
Yeah, no, I've said all along, I think Sanchez would be the guy.
For Baltimore as well as, yeah, for any opponent?
Yeah.
I thought you were a Hap guy for Baltimore. Am I wrong on that?
I think that you'd look at it as far as rest. You'd look at it as far as who was ready to go. But I've said, you know, throughout the entire month, I just think that Sanchez has been really good. I think that he's someone also who, in the course of four or five innings, one of his strengths is that he can go out there and really, you know, leave it all out there for a few innings and potentially even get more of those swinging strikes. So Hap is super valuable to this team. And if they're going to make any kind of a run, he's going to be essential to that. But in a game where you're probably going to lean on your bullpen heavily, the idea of getting four or five dominant innings out of Sanchez, then turning it over to the bullpen, I mean, that's a potentially successful recipe.
There's worse situations than having Aaron Sanchez start a wildcard game and then having Jay freaking Hap, who's had a marvelous year, ready to start the first game of a potential DS.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then in the wildcard game, which is looking very likely for the Blue Jays, I mean, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, but it really seems like that's the way things are going. And so you could line it up, a few starters available out of the bullpen. And like you said, you would have Hap, who's had this phenomenal year, ready to open things up if the Blue Jays advance beyond the wildcard game.
Right. Yeah, I think you would probably have Marcus Stroman and Francisco Liriano available out of the bullpen in that wildcard game.
I think almost for sure.
Yep. I think that would be a certain thing. I don't think you'd see Jay Hap or Marco Estrada in that game. Maybe Estrada, maybe not. But
maybe as a long guy.
Maybe.
Insurance.
But, I don't know. If you need a long guy in that game, right? I mean, what do you need? What's happened? Like something's gone terribly wrong.
Or you're tied after 10. You're tied after 11 innings.
Oh my God, that is a disaster scenario.
So that's why you would want to be prepared.
Can you imagine 0-0 going into like the 11th or something, and you've used so many relievers situationally in like the 6th and 7th innings?
It only takes about 2 innings for the Blue Jays to burn through the relievers they trust. So let's face it. It's not like they've got layers and layers of these guys. So that's why they have to have starting pitchers to complement that. I mean, right now, the relievers they trust, you got Cecil, Biagini, Asuna, and Grilly.
Yep.
That's it. You know, am I missing someone there?
You are missing somebody there. You are missing Joaquin Benoit.
Right.
And this is the thing now. Joaquin Benoit, who was so good. Toronto Blue Jays since he came over. Unbelievably good, really. 0.38 ERA in a ton of innings. The other night, running out of the bullpen, coming in to dust some fools, tore his calf. And that's not good. And he's, I mean, you know, you're probably, you're going to be without him for certain throughout a wild card in DS. So what happens now? Last night, what you saw John Gibbons do, go to Joe Biagini for two innings, Roberto Osuna for the ninth with a four-run lead. Brett Cecil was up and down quite a bit. In the clubhouse after the game, he had a huge ice pack on his shoulder. He looked like a guy who had logged some serious innings, who he didn't even get into the game because he was up and down so much. But that's the situation Jays are in right now. Everyone's so important. You can't really worry too much about, you know, getting a guy hot and not using him. But what happens now? How is John Gibbons going to get through his late innings?
Well, I think best case scenario for the Blue Jays is that they're able to essentially win a few games early, and then you could rest those relievers over the weekend against the Red Sox. And that's a dream scenario. There's no guarantee that happens. And if they're playing meaningful games until Sunday, these guys, the few relievers that they have who the Blue Jays really do trust, they're going to be used a ton. And then that would set up for Tuesday. So at that point, Monday is a day off for everyone. So that's something of a saving grace for the Blue Jays and for other teams heading into the wild card game. But man, if they're used heavily leading up to that, we've seen already some signs of fraying in the middle innings leading up to Roberto Osuna.
You hope that at least the final two games of the season don't mean anything.
Right.
Because then one of those days you start R.A. Dickey, and he has the longest rope you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, yeah.
easily a triple-digit pitch outing for him. It's going to be his last of the year. You let him go. It doesn't matter how many runs he gives up. It doesn't matter what happens. You let him go. And then the last game of the season, you're going to have like a bullpen day.
Sure.
You know, and you can cycle through like the guys who you probably aren't taking with you to the postseason. Danny Barnes, you know, the guy they called up, Chris Smith was his name.
Yep.
You know, Aaron Loop, you know, you cycle through these guys. Two innings of Loop. Sure. Yeah. Why not? Right. Like, and you just, cause the game's inconsequential. Danny Barnes, three innings, whatever. Who cares? The game's inconsequential. Doesn't matter. So you hope for that so you can rest guys. Cause you know, there have been some cracks in the armor of Jason Grilly lately, who has been used so much by this team. He's 39. And I mean, you know, he obviously got lit against the Yankees the other day. I was encouraged with his velocity in that game.
Consistent all month.
Right. Yeah. You know, the stuff is there. You know, he's still grunting to get that pitch over the plate and to get that extra velocity, but the stuff was, you know, still 94. He was just on the plate. So that's something that you can, that's less worrying than if he had a serious dip in velocity and dip in stuff. That would be a lot more worrying than the fact that he just didn't have his location in that outing.
Right. It's less worrying compared to that. It's more worrying compared to what the Blue Jays expected heading into September.
Sure. But, you know, you look at Jason Grilly's September outings, as I very quickly click on his game logs here, I believe there's only been a couple ones where he's given up. Yeah, he's had two really bad ones, both against the Yankees. Other than that, he's been clean. You know what I mean? Like, other than that, all of his innings have been scoreless. He's just had those two bad outings this month against New York.
Yeah,
that's it.
Those count, though.
I've certainly never said they don't count.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's as bad. He's had 10 outings this month.
Yeah.
Two of them have been bad, and they've both been against the Yankees.
I think
who maybe have something on him, or maybe just,
sure,
just see him well.
Yep.
But every other team he's faced in eight other outings, scoreless.
Yeah, with Grilly, if they're able to get him some additional rest, and he's one of the guys who could probably benefit most from that at age 39, then you're able to use off days in the playoffs to your advantage. And I think that he can still be a really good weapon. I'm just saying, you know, in the last month or so, it hasn't been very good for him.
Just two outings, Ben. That's it.
Yeah, but if you're only, how many outings has he made? 10?
10.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's significant.
2 out of 10 against the same team. I don't think it's as bad as people are making it out to be.
Sure. That's fair.
Roberto Osuna comes into the ninth inning last night, 4-run lead. What do you think of that?
So I think it tells you where the Blue Jays are at as far as trying to lock down wins. And it suggests that they do not want to mess around. Even if someone else could get three outs for them, and they have a lot of big league relievers in that bullpen, they could turn to a Bo Schultz and see what happens. But I think that tells you, John Gibbons, if he's got any shot of winning a game, he's going to go to the few guys that he trusts.
It's Roberto Osuna is interesting because when I feel like a lot of times when you bring Roberto Osuna into a game where they're, you know, where he's got some wiggle room, where he's got three runs or four runs to work with, he just starts kind of trying stuff. he starts kind of being like, hey, you know, I've been kind of working on this backdoor slider. Let me just try to throw this here. You know, like I've been working on this, you know, this four seamer. Cause he does, Roberto Osuna throws both a four seamer and a two seamer. He says, I've been working on this four seamer. Let me see if I can like spot away. Let me throw this guy first pitch change up. If you're watching that outing closely last night, he was shaking a lot. So that kind of tells me he was calling his own game. You can read it two ways. You could say either he just wanted to try some stuff. There's certain pitches he wanted to work on, see how they work in a game situation. Or you could read it and say Roberto Osuna wasn't that sure of his stuff. And Roberto Osuna only had one or two pitches that he really felt comfortable going to.
Right. Yeah. So would you go to him in that spot? I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that he's another guy that needs a few breathers in the course of the next week. But, you know, let's say Fenway Park on Friday, the Jays are in a game that they need to win. Do you go to him if it's four runs? Do you go to him in a five-run game? What's the kind of threshold where you'd go to him?
It's situational for me. It depends who else is available in your bullpen. And because I don't think you were going to see Grilly last night, although he did start warming up at one point, which is interesting to me. But I don't think you were going to see him. The Orioles just don't have that many lefties that you worry about. Once Chris Davis was thrown out of that game, Pedro Alvarez was the only lefty that you semi-worry about. You know, you don't care about Michael Bourne.
Yeah.
So you know, there isn't really an ideal Cecil spot there. And, you know, I mean, Joe Biagini gave you two pretty good innings. You know, he had pretty wicked stuff last night. He was pretty nasty. So, you know, situationally, I think it just kind of made sense. Roberto, as soon as he was up, he was hot. Throw him in there, you know. And you know, also let him, like, try out some stuff. Let him kind of work through because he had a bit of a velocity dip. At a certain point, you know, a few outings ago, he was kind of, you know, 94s, 95s, whereas we're usually, you know, 96, 97, even some 98s.
Right. Early in the month, he was up 98, 99.
Yeah.
So then absolutely. When you saw a few more 94s, 95s, you know, you notice. And, hey, pitchers don't have to be at the exact same number all season long. No. I don't think we would say that. But, yeah, you notice that kind of thing, especially when you're in these games and you're pushing. I mean, yeah, we've heard about some of the injuries to guys like Travis, guys like Donaldson, but I'm sure that pitchers on this team are feeling it too at this point in the season.
Yeah, and so there's no harm in letting him go out there and kind of work through it. You know, if he's going through a dead arm phase or something, or if he just kind of isn't finding that velocity, sometimes just pitching through it actually helps guys. Guys will tell you that, you know, just being out there. So some guys don't like extended periods of rest. Some relievers don't want to sit down for, you know, 4, 5, 6 days. Like we've seen Roberto Osuna sit down for a week at a time this season, and I feel like he's the kind of guy who would like to be on a more consistent schedule rather than a sporadic one.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Anything else with the bullpen that you got something. Ben has something.
So here's the thought. So Liriano.
Bringing it.
Bullpen. So I would think that after his start on Wednesday against the Orioles,
yeah.
After that, he's a reliever.
It's interesting, right? Because you have a decision to make. Because, and we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but if you're in an ALDS, right? You say Hap's going to start that first game, probably Estrada in the second. You're going to try to bring back Sanchez after the wild card game at some point in that series. Who's your fourth guy? Is it Marcus Stroman or is it LeFrancisco Liriano?
To me, it's Stroman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
State your case, sir.
He's pitched really well. He's been good. He's finished the season strong. Three good months. I mean, it's not any more complicated than that. I think that Stroman is someone who can give you 6-7 innings and get a lot of ground balls and generally keep his team in the game. And he's not, I mean, he's surrounded on a rotation that's really deep with guys who are pitching like aces. Stroman hasn't pitched like an ace this year, but he can still give you a good start based on what he's done the last 3 months.
Interestingly, Stroman does feel like more of a reliable, I don't want to say like sure thing, but like he does seem like more of a reliable option right now than Liriano, because Liriano does have his issues with command and with control, and he will walk some guys. Whereas, you know, Marcus Stroman just doesn't walk guys, really. They're at least not a ton, you know, and he's had really good stuff lately. And a lot of the time, you can just let that two-seamer sit in the zone and just, you know, eat ground balls all day long. So whereas Liriano, more of a strikeout guy, more of a, you know, painting around the zone kind of guy. Like when he's on, yeah, pretty unhittable. But when he's off, he's not. So, you know, there is a bit more, you know, uncertainty with Liriano maybe than with Stroman right now.
Yeah. And I think part of it probably depends on who you're facing. If you're facing a team like the Indians or Rangers that has more left-handed bats, then maybe Liriano earns a bit more consideration. You know, you look in particular at the wild card potential opponents for the Blue Jays, the Tigers and the Orioles. Not that either one of those guys would start the game, but those are the types of lineups where you probably want a right-handed starter just because they are pretty heavily veering toward the right side of the plate.
And I want to give Liriano credit because he has limited his walks quite a bit since coming over to Toronto. He's made 7 starts, and in all of them, save for one, he has had 2 walks or less.
For sure.
A lot better than what he was doing earlier this season.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing about Liriano is he's essentially just said, okay, I'm just gonna throw it right over the plate, and it doesn't matter if it leaks off to the corner. It doesn't matter if guys swing at it. There's a lot of movement to his stuff, and he can get away with that. So it's almost getting back to what he was doing in Pittsburgh, and that worked really well for him for 3 years.
So, yeah, it's interesting to talk about a guy who, like, wasn't that far out of the National League Cy Young conversation for a few years recently, to talk about him as the guy who would likely go to the bullpen. Is there a case to be made, though, that maybe if you're looking for one of those two guys to go to the bullpen, does maybe makes more sense for it to be Stroman because he throws more strikes. You come into a game with, you know, and you feel, you know, with maybe a bit more of a repertoire, he's got more pitches. Is there a bit of an argument to be made for Stroman being more of a fit for that bullpen role than Liriano, or am I reaching here?
So I think it's an interesting discussion. I'm not convinced that Stroman, I think both these guys would be pretty good relievers. I'm just not sure that Stroman is clearly more of a fit for the bullpen. I mean, just because he throws more strikes, well, throwing strikes isn't necessarily what you need out of a reliever. In some situations it is. In others, you want to be around the strike zone and tempting guys to expand the zone a little bit.
I always side for strike throwers coming out of the bullpen. Because especially against some of these lineups that you face who are so patient, who know you so well, like I do feel like you do want a guy who's going to be aggressive and attack. The last thing you want to do is be walking guys late in game.
The thing is, you say guys who know you so well. I'm not sure that the American League knows Francisco Liriano that well. He's been over in the NL for 3 years. So
that's a good point.
Maybe, you know, this time next year, it's a different story if the Blue Jays make it back there. But right now, he's a bit of a different look. And so if you're Chris Davis, when's the last time that he would have faced or seen a steady dose of Liriano? You know, it might be a tough matchup for him.
Well, Chris Davis, a free swinging lefty, is like the absolute, like, Liriano is a nightmare matchup for him.
Yeah. So that's the kind of guy where I can see, you know, if you've got a run of 3 or 4 batters and Liriano, you know, say you're playing Texas in the divisions, and we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but I think that he's the kind of guy that could line up pretty nicely against, you know, the Marlins and some of those left handed bats on Texas. Whereas Stroman, I mean, what's the situation? Stroman's someone who could bridge a gap. If your starter gets knocked out early, perfect. Stroman can pitch 4 or 5 innings and keep you in the game. But I don't, like, does he profile as a, would he be a 7th inning guy for the Jays?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a, well, he would be versatile for sure, Stroman, because he could give you some length. Maybe if he's coming out of the bullpen, he's a bit more max efforts. Maybe there's a bit more velo there. Be interesting to see. Just to round off the bullpen discussion with Joaquin Benoit going down, with the Blue Jays looking for answers, is there maybe a bit of an opening for a guy like a Scott Feldman or a Bo Schultz to creep into a bigger role here?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that it's not what the Blue Jays would have wanted a few days ago.
It's not how you draw it up.
It's not how you draw it up, but realistically, someone is going to have to absorb those innings, because even if you have Biagini and Cecil going into the 7th inning, well, someone's got to pitch the innings that Cecil would have pitched. So I think there's going to be a trickle down, and I'm not sure exactly who that guy's going to be, but I don't think the Blue Jays know either.
You know, you look at Bo Schultz as a guy with a really big arm, you know, 96 miles an hour, big fastball. You like that. Secondary stuff isn't great, but, you know, he could be a guy for it. You know, I don't know, even if you just need a big righty out, you know, like maybe he's a Rugi in a weird way, right? Like, and Scott Feldman, a guy who can give you some length, has been bad with the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, you can't, there's no way around it. He has not pitched well with the Blue Jays in mop-up situations. You know, we haven't seen him in a high leverage spot. I don't know. Do you test these guys in some of those spots in these next few games and maybe see if you have something there?
You take a look. Yeah. You know, it's going to have to be low leverage spots, I would think, because I really think that whenever there's something on the line, the Jays are going to go to those familiar arms.
Roberto, you're going to see a lot of Roberto Osuna in the postseason.
They should. Yeah. They should use him a lot.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to step away, but when we come back, we haven't talked about the brawl. We haven't talked much about the offense. We've just been talking about pitching. We'll talk about that and much more when we come back on At the Letters.
teams play this season. And Severino, no telling whose orders that was on, but he obviously hit smoke on purpose. There's a lot of big boys in that squad.
Yeah.
A lot going on in the middle. The little ones are breaking out. That's Gary Sanchez and Russell Martin saying, come on, let's go. This one's moving all over the diamond.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. You can get Ben on Twitter. He's at BNicholson-Smith. I'm on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. Our producer, Sam McKee, is on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. So the Blue Jays had a bit of a brouhaha earlier this week.
A dust-up.
A dust-up, a fracas, a melee, if you will. It's hard to call it a brawl because I only found one punch in it, and Justin Smoke landed it pretty well.
And you also, Arden, watched this probably 20 times, 30 times. I mean, I was sitting beside you at the time, and you're just looping it back and forth, slowing it down frame by frame. If you have any questions, Arden is the guy for brawl-related questions.
Well, because you can't, with the baseball, like, as it's happening, like, it's just this sea of humanity, right? And you just, it's so hard to see really what's happening because there's little pockets of confrontation throughout the thing, right? So you really do have to go back and watch it over and over and over again and isolate a little part of the screen and say, all right, I'm just going to watch what Justin Smoke's doing right now. All right, I'm just going to watch what CeCe Sabathia's doing right now, you know? And just, you'd really have, that's how you really kind of figure out the anatomy of these things.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on, that's for sure.
Was that, I mean, how do you even phrase a question about it? Like, it's never a smart thing to fight anybody. It's never a smart thing to be violent, ever, unless you're a mixed martial artist or something. But, like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, I would direct people to the article that you wrote saying this has been, you know, a trend in the last little while where people are pitching inside to the Blue Jays, and in particular, Josh Donaldson. But that is a bigger picture thing. It didn't mean that they would have to get into this dust up specifically in the final game against the Yankees.
Does it say anything about this team that on, you know, what was it, December 26th when it happened? Like, this late in the season, the team has decided it's time for justice. Like, in the heat of a playoff race, like, it would be dumb if you did in May, whatever, but at least then you're not playing games of crazy consequence. At least then you're not risking losing players to injury or suspension in such an important part of the season to decide that this is the time that we're going to, like, exert vigilante justice. Like, is that, like, what? You know, it just seems unnecessary.
Oh, and keep in mind, they did it in May as well. So,
Fair.
They're an equal opportunity dust-up team.
But, like, so, you know, I wrote the story. And look, it was because Josh Donaldson, last time they were in New York, got pitched up and in aggressively. And he didn't like it. And he told guys on his team they didn't like it. And I think a topic in that closed door meeting the Blue Jays had, in that players only meeting, was protecting players. And if you look at the stats, shout out to at James and T.O., who just does yeoman's work on the Statcast. The Blue Jays have seen the second highest amount of up and in pitches this season. And Josh Donaldson is right up there in the top 10 in the MLB in up and in pitches. So I think a topic in that meeting was, you need to protect us better. Other teams need to know they can't take these liberties with us. I kind of side with Jeff Blair on this, with, like, to do it now, to do it with, you know, five games left, six games left, like, it's too late.
There's a cost is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And in this case, the cost is you have a risk of injury, and that risk isn't always going to manifest itself in actual injuries, but it did this time. And in this case, it was incredibly costly for the Blue Jays.
Unbelievably.
And what do they gain? They gain maybe a few extra pitches that are outside instead of inside, maybe a little bit more comfort for their batters. Maybe there's some sort of unifying sense for the team. But the losses are very concrete and pretty significant when you think about losing your seventh inning reliever. And the status of Devin Travis is unknown right now. But until he's back in the field, until he's his usual self for an extended period, I don't know. I mean, that shoulder injury that he aggravated in the dust up is pretty significant. It's worth watching, and that only adds to the toll that this fight had on the team.
I completely understand why the Blue Jays did it. I just think the cost-benefit analysis of it is just, it's not worthwhile.
You're telling me they didn't sit there and weigh it out in the pro and con chart before they sprinted onto the field and defended Justin Smoak?
Right, and you saw, you know, it didn't even have to get to the point where, you know, when Smoak got hit, I mean, look, it sucks. It sucks that he got hit, especially where he got hit.
Also, but Severino shouldn't have had two shots to throw at.
No, he shouldn't have had. He should have been gone after the first one. Regardless, I think Jay Happ should have been gone after he threw intentionally at a guy. It's in the rule book. If you throw intentionally at somebody, you should be gone. But regardless, like after Smoak got hit, if he had just walked first base and if Blue Jays hadn't come leaping over the top rope to come out and, you know, and hurt their shoulders and their calves, I mean, it's, you know, maybe just a bit of awareness. I talked to Kevin Pillar after the game and he was like, as it was happening, I was thinking back to like, wait, I have to restrain myself here. It's hard to restrain yourself when you're in the middle of a melee with, you know, two full 40-man rosters like running out, right? But he said, look, I remembered back to Texas. I know what the suspension is for fighting. I can't get suspended right now. We can't afford to lose guys. You lost two guys to injury.
Yeah, two of the more significant players. These are not the 37th and 38th players on the roster.
You lose Ryan Tepera and, you know, it, like you lost seriously good players.
Yeah, it's pretty costly. And for to what end? I mean, it's a... You know, whatever advantages are probably always going to be hard to perceive from the outside. I can't say that they don't exist, but they certainly pale in comparison to the losses of two really good players.
So, and then later in the game, you know, Mark Teixeira hits a long home run off of Jason Grilley, flips the bat, gets back to the dugout, yells blown save.
Credit, you know, I'm on team Mark Teixeira on this.
So I'm trying to set you up here. You were so, and then you know, after the whoever hit the next home run, I forget was whoever it was who hit the second home run in the inning. Aaron Hicks hit the next home run in the inning. Thank you, Sam. And they're celebrating in the top step of the dugout and they're wooting and the whole thing. And then you go into that New York Yankees clubhouse after the game. Do you get the sense that a team really enjoyed giving the Blue Jays a dose of their own medicine?
Oh yeah, they were. Oh yeah, they heard that Benoit had slipped coming out of the bullpen, yeah. And they were remarking on that, and they were really enjoying it. And I think just starting with the bat flip for Mark Teixeira, for a guy after this many seasons in the big leagues, it might be his final big league home run. He's hit more than 400. He's entitled to a bat flip. I am completely fine with that in a game tying situation. You know, big crowd. Game on the road, absolutely. Flip your bat. You've earned it. So starting with that, that's why I say that I very much understand where he's coming from. And the Blue Jays have no grounds to yell at a guy for flipping his bat. I get in the moment you're heated up about it. But realistically, this is a team that flips bats. And that's good. Bat flipping is fun. But mm-hmm. to get mad at a guy when he does it to you doesn't work. You can't have a double standard like that. So I think that, you know, it was interesting to me to hear these guys, essentially uncensored, Mark Teixeira, Chase Headley, basically explaining that they don't like the Blue Jays. And it was interesting because they really weren't holding back. They're saying, listen, this team is the king of fun, to borrow Headley's term. Right. And he said they've got to be able to take some of their own medicine.
It's a little rich, the Blue Jays getting upset about celebrations.
Yeah.
It's a little rich. A little hypocritical. Would you and you kind of hit on it. Would you say, I mean, the Blue Jays are kind of become a bit of a heel. Yeah. In Major League Baseball.
Based on the Yankees' reaction, the Orioles in town now, of course, that's another team. But there's not a lot of love lost between the Blue Jays and Baltimore Orioles. And look, this is going to happen if you play teams 19 times in the course of a season. And, I don't think that, I don't view the Blue Jays differently than I did in May, for example, or April. But around the league, they're not particularly well-liked.
No, they are not. And if you're a fan of this team, I mean, you need to, A, understand that. And B, probably embrace that.
Yeah.
You know, embrace the hate. Enjoy it. Because, yeah, I mean, it's the blue, you know, and I think, what was the John Gibbons line the other day? We're not the evil empire, are we? Well, no, but you're also not really looked at very favorably around baseball.
Right.
People don't like you and your players. They don't like you.
Yeah. And that's not, I think that there's room for, you know, if you look at guys individually, these are guys who have great relationships around the game and guys who are well-liked as individuals. When you talk about Tulowitzki and Stroman, of course, has lots of people. Headley called him out, but Stroman has tons of support in the game. And all these guys are connected in their own ways. Gibbons, everyone on this team. But as a collective, the way that they operate and the way that they're perceived is not all that favorable.
They're just such an intense bunch. You look at Josh Donaldson every day, like, shows up just like locked in. Troy Tulowitzki is like one of the most intense people I've ever been around. And I think young players like Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, they feed off of that. Marcus Stroman on the mound is intense. That guy is a competitor. And it's just, it just kind of, Kevin Pillar is an intense dude when he's playing this game, right? Like, you know, and you look at some of the reactions when, you know, Blue Jays just miss pitches or they chase pitches that they're mad at and throw bats and stuff like that. They're upset because, and I think that, like, intensity just kind of, it has bred a bit of contempt around baseball.
Jason Grilli celebrating saves, yeah, or big outs. Yeah. And it's fun when it's going well. And, you know, for the record, I think that celebrations on the field are great.
Sure.
I love a good bat flip. Sure. I love even a poorly executed bat flip. It's all, you know, bat flip after a walk. I don't care. It's fun. Like, this is entertainment. We are in the entertainment industry. And so I expect to be entertained. And I certainly would think that fans would expect to be entertained. So that's great. Just, you can't have a double standard.
No, absolutely not. I want to see a bat flip fail. I want to see someone try to flip their bat and just...
Teixeira was close, man. He was... Teixeira, like, it's so clear that he had never flipped his bat before, because if you go back and look at it, there was not a lot. He was not gaining a lot of style points there.
It was basically just like a straight up and down, eh? Yeah. Like, it was just one of those, yeah.
Made it even better.
It wasn't the Jose. Like, no. Jose is one of the best bat flippers you're ever going to see.
He is a professional. He's great at the bat flip, and that's fun to watch.
Underrated bat flipper, Russell Martin.
After walks.
Yes, after walks and after some homers as well. Like, just, it's kind of like he kind of like tosses it in disgust. He kind of just like discards it aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a real showy bat flip. It's more of like a subtle one.
Yeah.
But it's good.
Edwin holds on to it, right? Going up the...
Edwin, he doesn't hold on to his bat when he swings and pitches. Man. He sends his bat helicoptering into the stands half the time. But yeah, when he hits the ball, he holds on to it like halfway up the line.
And then gently tosses it away.
Yes, absolutely. We'll end on this. Speaking of people who had a lot of fun with this game, Jose Fernandez is somebody who has got some very deserving tributes lately for the energy and the charisma and the fun he brought to this game. It's very interesting to me that a lot of those traits are celebrated in death and denigrated in life.
Right.
Right? Like when players do a lot of that stuff, when, you know, in the game, you know, people get crusty and upset and people get thrown at, and then, you know, somebody passes tragically and they're celebrated for it. It's a little weird to me, but it's, you know, Jose Fernandez was legitimately, and I don't think enough Blue Jays fans, you know, realize this, because they don't see him. They never see him pitch. So you only watch the Blue Jays. That's fine. You have busy lives. Legitimately one of the best pitchers, not just young pitchers in baseball.
Oh yeah. And he was on a historic track. When you look at how young he was and how much he had accomplished, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, I thought that Sam Miller made a great point about this on the Baseball Perspectives podcast, where he was saying, you know, there's so much to be sad about when it comes to Jose Fernandez, because it's a huge loss, and mostly, you know, for the people who knew him and his family, but to a much, much lesser extent for baseball. But the one thing to not be sad about on the Fernandez front is he wasn't someone whose potential went unfulfilled. He fulfilled that potential. He became one of the dominant pitchers in baseball. And you're right. I mean, as people who watch mostly Blue Jays games and are in this Toronto market, it's not something that we were exposed to a ton. But, you know, he definitely realized that potential and became one of the best pitchers that you're going
to
find.
He lived a remarkable life. He really did. When you think about what he went through to get here from Cuba, like multiple attempts to leave Cuba that, you know, that failed. They finally got here, and, you know, he was in the majors at 20 this year, 23 years old, 253 strikeouts this year, Ben, in 182 innings.
It's Cy Young stuff,
it's
really.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable what this guy did. I would encourage everybody to read Jeff Passan's piece on, it's called The Tragic Final Night of Jose Fernandez's Life. It's a fascinating piece. I found it strangely relatable, and it was a great, is a great piece to read. I recommend everyone read that. And, if you have time and if you have MLB.tv, I recommend you go back and you watch. Did you watch it?
I've seen clips. I didn't watch the whole thing.
I went after the brawl game because I was trying to watch it during that game, and the brawl happened. And the whole night was kiboshed. I went home and I watched it, and I was up until like 5 in the morning watching this thing. And
it was the first
game
after.
Yeah, first game. It was honestly unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. You're looking at a dugout full of grown men, of baseball players weeping uncontrollably. Unbelievable. With when the Mets come onto the field to embrace the Marlins. Yeah, just some of the most powerful images I've ever seen in a baseball game. And that's not even mentioning D. Gordon's at bat. He takes the first pitch wearing Jose Fernandez's helmet, batting from the right side of the plate, his left-handed hitter trying to mimic his batting stance. And he steps back into the left side, takes one pitch, and then hits like a rocket to the second deck. This is D. Gordon, who didn't have a home run all year in more than 300 plate appearances, has 8 home runs in his career, and he hit a rocket to the second deck and is just bawling as he's rounding the bases, like crying uncontrollably as he's rounding the bases. I've never seen anything like that in my life.
It's crazy. Yeah, and I think that reading and listening to people talk about Fernandez too, it's interesting to hear that he's someone who really liked the hitting side of the game too. So this is someone who would have appreciated that home run where, you know, apparently from by all accounts, you know, someone who would trash talk his teammates, someone who would, you know, go up there and try to hit home runs, try to contribute with the bat. And, you know, to see his teammate do that in the first game back, pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, unbelievable. And like you think about some of the stuff that went into it. The biggest thing that came out of me from the passing story was the Marlins had bumped his start back a day.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't done that, I mean, he's not out late that night before. Life's crazy.
Yeah. So many what ifs. And yeah, you can, who knows exactly how things would have turned out, but it's the bottom line is it's a huge tragedy.
Yeah. It's a huge loss. It's tragic. And it was a sad day for baseball, but you know, some of the tributes have been great and just some of the remembrances of his life have been great. So I encourage you to go watch his highlights, watch that game, read up about him, learn about him, and appreciate what he was. We appreciate you for listening to us on At The Letters. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. For Ben Nicholson-Smith, for my producer, Sam McKee, my name's Arden Zwelling. We'll talk to you next time on At The Letters.